Mr. Bumble from ITAC, are you ready with your presentation?
Yes, we are, Chairperson.
Okay. You may proceed.
Thank you. Morning, honorable members. I would like to first introduce the ITAC team. I've got the general manager here, Mr. Philip Semela. And with me also, I've got the chief financial officer, Ms. Ntsobe Nkwana. We are happy to present to you these two reports. It's actually going to presented in one, but it's two reports. It's the annual report 2021 and the quarter report of 2021-2022. But we are going to present them as one. Let's go to the table of contents quickly.
Who's sharing your presentation?
Oh, let's share it.
I see you have been given hosting rights. If you can share your presentation.
Okay, thanks. Are you able to see it to the side, Chair?
Yes, if you can just put it in slide mode.
We are not getting that option. Can someone assist us from that side?
Mr. Emmons, can you assist? Ms. Sheldon?
Chair, I believe it's under view. If you can click on view. And then full screen mode.
There it is. Can you see it now?
Yes, thank you very much. You may
thank you. In our table of contents, we'll start with the introduction. After that, it's the tariff investigations, trade remedies, import and export control, and then we have achievements of ITAC this past financial year. We'll update the members on our support for poultry and the sugar industry. We'll also talk to human resource management, corporate governance, Auditor General's report, and the financial performance of the institution in the year under review. Honorable members, ITAC continues to operate in a very challenging international environment and domestic environment. In the international environment, what we are faced with is the big powers and not making unilateral decision and not conforming to the multilateral trading system, the rules-based multilateral trading system. An example of this is some of you will know that we are about to review the anti-dumping duties on chickens, but the USA negotiated a quota of 70 tons, and it means that they have to import over 70 tons for them for the anti-dumping duties to kick in. Because they don't even reach the 70 tons, it means that the anti-dumping duties have no impact on the USA. So it undermines tariff policy and our efforts to protect local industry, because that negotiated agreement is outside the multilateral trading system. It is only applicable to the US. So the 70 tons, it's a quota that they don't reach. So the anti-dumping duties are just in principle, but they are not really effective, or they don't affect the USA at all, exposing the local industry to dump imports from the USA. In the domestic industry, as you know, ITAC administers tariffs on behalf of SACO. Here we have a challenge because of policy alignment. The customs duties that we impose, we ask them to comment the neighboring countries, but because we have no policy alignments, their interests are not always the interest of South Africa. They use customs duties for fiscal purposes, and we use them as for industrial policy purposes. So in instances where you create a rebate, they see this as a reduction in the customs revenue pool that is distributed amongst members. And when you support industry with tariff increases, 90% or over 90% of the industries are in South Africa. So they look at the duty, they look at the inflationary impact of the duty on their economies, not as a support for their domestic industries, because they don't have a lot of domestic industries. Most of them are concentrated in South Africa. So this policy, this alignment of policy is necessary, but it's so difficult because these are smaller economies and their interests are not the same as South Africa. So what we have here is a challenge when we want to quickly impose a duty. You get a lot of comments against that duty, or if you want to create a rebate, you will get a lot of comments that will oppose the duties because the policies are not aligned. ITAC administers instruments on behalf of all the members, and it continues to do that. But what we are currently doing now is to ensure that the tariff support is actually located within the broader government incentive schemes. Members, we've got very low bound rates. So if, for instance, is a bound rate of 5, which means it's the bound rate is the limit that you can't go above when you're imposing the duties. If it's 5%, it doesn't really make an impact to the industry. So what we are doing is to ensure that if you have got a master plan, the tariff becomes part of the incentive schemes of government, not as a standalone item, because it doesn't have an impact on its own. The bound rates are low. We joined the WTO as a developed country, and we were given very low bound rates. And the changes in the duties doesn't really give us the desired result in a number of companies. So we want to have tariffs to locate them within the broader government's incentive schemes and try as much as possible to align it with the overall government objectives. This is what we do. We have got also a section under, it's called import and exports, where we issue permits. We control some goods. I said these goods are mostly your second-hand goods. That we control and other goods such as arms that we are prohibited. And this is a section on its own at ITAC. So we have got the trade remedies, we've got tariffs, and we've got that unit. Next. ITAC, as I've explained earlier, ITAC operates in a policy environment. So we are not, we are independent in doing our investigation. But we are not autonomous from government. So we are guided by the overall policy framework of government. These will include your national growth path, your industrial policy action plan, and the current master plan that are being developed for each and every industry. members, all these policies, if you look at them, if you read them, they all advocate for a developmental approach to tariff setting. All our amendments are evidence-based and on a case-by-case basis, as opposed to a blanket approach. So we don't have one blanket approach. We do an investigation on a case-by-case basis and make a decision based on the information that we have get from industry, and we make a final decision. And so it's on a case-by-case. It's not a blanket approach. It's not that one industry will get one duty. It's per application, and we evaluate the merit and apply our criteria to each and every application that we get. And when we are doing investigations, the key considerations in each and every investigation is production, it's investment, and job creation. This graph shows the investigations and the determinations that we have made since the inception of ITED. From inception, you see that we received a number of applications and the determinations were positive. So the total number of application is represented by the red bar, and then the other one, the determinations, it's the blue one. So you can see that most of the applications that we received were approved. But if you look at 2004 and 2005, you will see we received a number of applications, which is 10, and most of them were not approved. So it was rejections in all of them. After this year, up to 2009, the number of applications started to reduce drastically. This is when what I call the liberalization period, where ITAC as an institution informed by the policy of government was more into liberalization up to 2009, and applicants started we didn't get a lot of applications at this time, and we were doing a few applications because the determinations were negative and industry was starting to be aware of that. But in 2009, there was a realization from a policy perspective that maybe in the previous years we had liberalized too quickly, and we started getting a lot of positive determinations also from 2009 up to 2019. The decline there on the last couple of years is because of COVID, and we attributed to COVID-19, but you can see it's picking up again. I think the impact was mostly on 2020 and 2021, where we didn't get a lot of applications. But it is picking up, and we are getting a lot of applications. I think next year the bars will be much higher than this. As stated in the introduction, we continue to use tariffs as industrial policy instruments to promote production, investment, and job creation. It is mainly to assist industries to be competitive against low-priced imports. Members, what we normally get, or the motivations around application, is that they are just not competitive against the big manufacturers like coming from China. So it's a problem of economies of scale in most cases. Our industries are too small to compete with China. So if you can't leverage economies of scale, it means you can't reduce your unit cost of production. This is actually the major problem. So our tariffs are actually trying to level the playing field, the playing ground between imported products, particularly from Asian markets and South African products. But so, as I mentioned earlier, our biggest challenge is that our bound rates are very low. You find that there is no space, there is no tariff policy space in most goods. The bound rates, you find that the applicable duty is 5%, and the bound rate is 10. So you can only assist the industry with 5% in most cases. This is what we are faced with. This is why I was emphasizing that tariff policy has to be located within the broader government incentive scheme, not as a standalone item, because it is less effective if it stands on its own. And the key considerations on tariffs, as I mentioned earlier, will always be job creation, investment, and domestic production. What has changed at ITEC in recent years is that we require reciprocal commitments from firms. So if we give you a tariff protection, we also want you to be specific on what you are going to do to contribute to the overall government objectives. This is mostly on employment. So we do impact assessment after every 3 years to see if you have met your commitments and see if we can review the duties. And if, for instance, we see that you can still improve, we increase the duties to the bound rate and also ask for more commitments. These are negotiated also on a case-by-case basis. This is a big change, because in the past, the reciprocal commitments never used to form part of the motivation. But now it does. It's a huge thing that we have started some time back, and we are pursuing it. And we are trying to make these commitments legally binding, so that if you are saying you are going to, if you get tariff support, which we know has got an inflationary impact on the domestic market, but we do it because you are saying you are going to create jobs, you are going to invest in the local economy. So we consider it on those bases, additional to the criteria of competitiveness and production and sales. So it has become one of the things that we have introduced in tariff policy. And I must say, the impact assessments that we have done recently, they show that industries do deliver in their promises. In fact, most of them, they exceed their projections. You find that they have promised to employ additional 20 people, and only to find that they've grown bigger than what they have committed to. So I think we are winning in that case. This impact assessments are usually a period of 3 or 5 years, depending on the agreement with the industries. As I've mentioned earlier, in terms of the sugar industry and the poultry industry, we are currently reviewing the duties on poultry from the USA, and we are currently looking at assisting the sugar industry, because in recent times there's complained to ITEC that there's a shortage in the market of sugar, and we are having meetings with the sugar industry to see how we can assist. Maybe look at a temporary rebate that will allow sugar to come back, to come in without the duties, without the applicable duties. But this will be done after an investigation to see if the local industry cannot supply. Under the tariff investigation unit, additional to doing the investigation for customs duty increases, rebates, and duty reduction, we administer the APDP, a program of the DTIC. ITEC does that because ITEC does rebates and customs duties, and this program, which is an incentive scheme for the automotive industry, is based on rebates on and customs duties. So ITEC does that. What we do there is that when you a company produces products, or automotive product, it could be fully built up vehicles or automotive products, you earn rebates on production. So when you produce, you earn rebates on production. So for the fully built up vehicles, you earn 50% on the value of your domestic, on your value addition in the domestic market. For components, you earn 62.5% on your value of production. But those rebates are used to bring in the products that you do not manufacture in the domestic market. So what the purpose of this is to try and assist firms to rationalize their production lines, to also specialize. to also specialize. What an example of this would be, maybe if you look at Mercedes, for instance, they manufacture only the C-Class in the domestic market for in high volume so that they can leverage economies of scale and reduce their unit cost of production and be able to compete with imported products. They only manufacture the C-Class, and the rest of the derivatives of Mercedes are imported using these rebates, credit certificates that they earn in their during the production process. So the thinking behind this is that we are eliminating a situation where a manufacturer will change machinery to manufacture a certain model, and after a certain run, change again the machinery, and this stop and starts will result in small volumes for each and every model. And because it's a numbers game, you will not be able to compete with a big manufacturer. So by promoting using these rebates, we are promoting rationalization, and you end them on production, and you are able to bring the derivatives that you don't manufacture in the South African market duty-free. The elements of the APDP, it consists of four elements, honorable members. It is stable duties. It's 25% for vehicles and 20% for components. And the second part of it is the automotive investment, which is the AIS. This is a cash grant. The 20% is based on the value of new investments. So it's between 20 and 25% depending on your performance with regards to employment and investment. So you get 20% only on your new investment, but it's a cash grant. This one is administered by the DTI. We also have the production incentive. The production incentive, I've explained it earlier. This is actually on your value addition. So you take the price of a product, you deduct all imported content, and the figure that you get there for fully built up manufacturers, you apply a factor of 50%, and you get a rebate certificate of that amount. Also, for component manufacturers, you take the value, the final value of the automotive components, you deduct all imported material used, and you apply a factor of 62.5%, then you get your rebate certificate. This rebate certificate, I've explained it earlier, it is actually used to import products that you need in the manufacturing process, but you don't manufacture in the domestic market. Also, for vehicles, you are able to manufacture one model, and the rest of the models you use the certificates to import. It is 50% for vehicles, as I said, and 62.5% for component manufacturers. The last part, the last one is called VALA. This one is only available to fully build up vehicle manufacturers. It is based on volumes. It's a rebate credit certificate also. To earn it, you have to manufacture over 10,000 units to qualify. So we are trying to encourage high volume manufacturing. We know that it's a numbers game, and if you manufacture fewer volumes than 10,000 units, it's difficult for you to go completely CKD. It's only going to be your screwdriver operation or systemic knockdown operations, and these are not able to compete in the international market. So our starting point is that 10,000 units. We give you a rebate on that one. Once you start manufacturing 10,000, some go up to 50,000, and when you go to 50,000, the rebates certificate increases. This is administered by SAS, not ITEC, but it is also part of the package under the APDP. So it's four elements. The first one is a stable tariff regime. Second one is the production incentives. The third one is the AIS, which is the automotive investment scheme. And the last one is the VALA, the volume assembly localization allowance. All these the package of this is called the Automotive Production and Development Program that is administered by ITEC on behalf of the DTIC. This slide is just talking to the eligible product certificate. When you apply, you get what we call an EPC. The EPC is an eligible production certificate. It is what you get to say you do qualify. So there are certain conditions that you must meet for you to participate under the APDP. And when you do qualify, we give you what we call an EPC. Then when you are participating, and then which means that you are producing vehicles, you get what we call a PLCC. So this is the rebate credit certificate that is used at SAS to rebate the products that are not manufactured in the domestic market that I was alluding to earlier. Under the APDP, we've got what we call a verification verification unit. So what we do here is to keep honest people honest. After we've done all this, we send our people to have a look whether your claims were correct and everything was done correctly. Also, FAS does the checks, but ITEC has got a unit that is dedicated to verification. Because what happens here, they are getting the credit certificate can run into billions. And if you are not strict on verification, what you can do, you can end up with fraud and end up with the people using certificates that don't qualify or that do not produce anything in the domestic market. So we've got a verification unit that goes and checks whether the companies are still complying with the legislative framework and the guidelines and regulations applicable to the program. I'm done with tariffs. And the next slide is going to our defensive measures, which we call trade remedies. And remember, the tariffs are actually based on the policy of government. But trade remedies are our defensive mechanism. It is mostly the WTO tax that guides us. Under the trade remedies, we've got anti-dumping duties, we've got countervailing measures, we've got sunset reviews. Anti-dumping duties are used to counter the exportation of products at prices which are lower than the domestic selling prices to an importing territory, thereby causing injury in the form of loss in jobs, investment, sales, and other factors in the production process. And countervailing measures are used to remedy material injury caused by subsidized imports, and the injury also is on jobs. Like the anti-dumping duties is also on jobs, investments, and sales. And after a period of 5 years, what we do is what we call sunset review. Both the anti-dumping measures and the countervailing measures are reviewed after a period of 5 years. This is actually just to check if there will be recurrence of dumping or subsidized imports if the duties are removed. So the sunset review is just to check, and it's also according to the WTO tax, we are required to go and check if the firm is still dumping those products in the domestic market, or there's a need maybe to remove those duties because the dumping is no longer there. The last one is the safeguard measures. This is used as a result of unforeseen circumstances, particularly when we meet our obligations at the WTO. There are unforeseen circumstances that you couldn't know when we joined the WTO that there will be a shortage, for instance, or there will be an oversupply of steel, and it will affect prices in the domestic, or it will increase the volume of imports that are coming to a domestic market. It was difficult to know that. So as a result of our commitments, you are allowed to impose safeguard measures, which are actually just for countering a surge in the markets of volumes imported. But this applies not only to unfair trade, it also applies to fair trade. It's not just an unfair trade measure. It also applies to fair trade. It just looks at a surge that was unforeseen or sudden, and we apply this one. At ITEC, we have done a number of anti-dumping measures, sunset reviews and safeguards, but we have never done countervailing measures. We have never done the countervailing one at ITEC. This is just a list of the anti-dumping duties that we have imposed in the past financial year. It is duties on import, on pasta, the frozen boning chickens, floor glass, laminated safety glass, chain links, garden tools, potato chips, and tires. Some of these are in progress. This is the pasta one we have done. Safeguards, the duties that we have imposed are on bolts and hexagon heads of iron and or steel. And we have extended duties on set screws. The extension is on the safeguard measure. Sunset reviews, we have done sunset reviews on frozen boning chicken, float glass, stainless steel sinks, wheelbarrows, garlic. The garlic one is in progress. This is also shown, it's a presentation of some of the investigations that we have done under anti-dumping. The reviews, these are the sunset reviews that I was mentioning. Most of them, the duties were maintained, so we did not remove any duties under the sunset reviews. Most of the duties were maintained under sunset reviews. And the safeguards, we have only done two, like I've explained earlier. It is the bolts with hexagon heads of iron or steel and the set screws. Under import and export control, the third unit item that I mentioned, I said we have got tariffs, we've got trade remedies, and we've got import and export control. Under the import and export control is where mostly we issue just permits to allow certain goods and to prohibit some. We don't issue a permit if a good, some of the goods are prohibited. On the imported, on import permits, which we issued 18,749, and the target was 16,000. The majority of the permits were issued in respect of imported products used in the following sectors: marine resources, mineral fuels and oils, chemicals, rubber and tires, metals, capital goods, and mechanical appliances, and the automotive industry. The import permits are actually crucial for the automotive industries. If you can see the neighboring countries, they can't have an automotive industry because the second-hand cars have taken over the market. Even in South Africa, if you can allow second-hand automotive vehicles, what you will have is the local industry manufacturing cars will die, will perish. There is no way you can allow the second-hand cars. They are very, very cheap compared to a brand new car. So it can be a dumping site for the developed nations. So we issue permits for certain types of vehicles, but most of the second-hand vehicles are not allowed in the domestic market. Then we have got the export permits that we issue. Currently, we are issuing them mostly on scrap metal and other products. We have issued 15,100 out of a target of 12,000 units. And the achievements, honorable members, are mostly on the tariff increases that we have approved at ITEC. As I have explained earlier, it is based on, we are also demanding, or we are also requesting that industry reciprocate. So as we grant the tariff protection, we ask industry to also assist us in job creation, investments, actually import substitution. We emphasize this, so we are happy that most of the companies do reciprocate, and as you can see, some of them are talking about increasing the employment And we go after 3 years and check, and most of them have actually met these commitments. So through tariffs, we are able to create jobs, and we are able to also attract investment, because these are the commitments that we want them to make. We want them to increase domestic production and employ more people if we grant a tariff increase. And this, to a certain extent, we have been very successful. With the human resources, the next slide, we think we have done the core business slides, and the next one is human resources management. So what's here, the pie chart shows that we employ 60% females and 40% males. And 89% of these are African, 4% are Indians, colored youth are represented by 3%, and white people are represented by 4%. This is also the race profile in senior management position. We've got one colored person, we've got one Indian, we have got 4 white people, and we've got 7 African people. In terms of gender, we've got 5 females under SMS senior management position, and we have got 8 males. In terms of corporate governance, ITEC is an independent statutory body and a creation of Section 7 of the International Trade and Administration Act of 2002. So ITEC, honorable members, is a creature of statute. It has to comply with the certain legislation and also certain policies of government, as mentioned earlier. The main act is the ITA Act. We also have to comply with the PMFA, the PPFA, and National Trade Regulation and Supply Chain Regulations. ITEC has also got an audit committee, also has got a risk committee. The risk committee is a subcommittee of the audit committee. In our last audit, the audit committee raised findings, but most of the findings are based on our reporting. And to a large extent, the AC, the audit committee, is satisfied with the content and quality of monthly and quarterly reports prepared by ITEC management. The AC is also satisfied that the internal audit function is operating independently. The audit committee is of the view that the function was not sufficiently resourced, though, based on the approved plan, and has not been fully effective. And we are addressing this. We are trying to address our vacancy rate and employ some in strategic position to try and address some of these findings by the audit committee. The risk committee at ITEC, we maintain a risk register that is updated on a continuous basis. The risk committee reports to the audit committee, and we do update the risk registers to see where our risks are and try to improve on a continuous basis. This pie chart shows the performance of ITEC. The total budget allocation for 2021-2022 financial year was 113,380,000, of which 5,500 was for assisting ITEC towards administering the PPS, which is the price preference system on ferrous and non-ferrous scrap metal. The actual revenue received is actually it's 114,861,000. 815 rands. This is additional to the allocation by Treasury or by the DTI. It's a part of it. It includes interests and recoveries from staff. The actual spending in 21 March 2022 was 98,615,105 rands, and this amounts spent as a percentage of total budget was 78%, was 87%. Most of the money goes to employee-related costs. So most of our budget members goes to staff salaries and staff wages and salaries, and the rest is left to operational costs. So we will we'll further discuss this in the next slides. But the second item that takes a lot of money, it's legal expenses, or it's rent followed by legal expenses. So the highest amount goes to employee costs, and the second the highest amount goes to our rent, and the third highest goes to our legal costs. This is what I was stating earlier. Out of the 114 million, 91 million, approximately 91 million goes to salaries and wages. If you can look further down, you see the rental and leases at 9 million, and we've got legal fees at 2.5 million. So the financial performance, the variance here, the amount of 5.5 million was received towards assisting ITEC administer the price and preference system. The unit that really assists us with this one is the import and export unit that I was explaining earlier. They are the ones that are responsible for the price preference system. And we have it has been renewed a number of times. We first thought it was going to be a temporary intervention, but it has been renewed a number of times. The vacancy rate at ITEC is a little bit high, at 24.19%. This is because of trying to do more with less. We are trying to look at strategic positions that we can fill, though. For instance, I can make an example that we used to have a chief economist, which was taking a lot, much of ITEC's budget. So, but that position we have changed and hired a lower level person, but who has got same qualification, master's degree in economics, and these are the people that are doing the impact assessment for us, and we are trying to see if how that goes, because if you do hire a person at the highest level, they leave, and also it's a huge cost. So we are trying to find ways to save by seeing if at a lower level someone can be able to do the same work. And in this one, we've been successful. We had the impact assessment that we are receiving of high quality, and we are happy with this one so far. The net assets at ITEC from at 31st March of 2022 amounted to 23.1 million. There was an increase of 16.2 million compared to 2020-21. Cash and equivalents increased from 24.2 million in 2020-21 financial year to 37.8 million in the 2021-22 financial year. There was a 62% decrease in legal provisions, as most of the old matters were settled and the final overprovision from previous years reversed. Net cash generated by operation increased from 14.7 million in 2021-22 financial year compared to the 0.4 million for 2020-21 financial year. As explained earlier, ITEC received an unqualified audit opinion with findings, but it is important to stress that the findings were only on our reporting, and management has developed an audit improvement plan to address the root causes that led to the regression, because in the past years we have been getting clean audits. So the regression, we've got a plan to actually address it. The external audit 3 years rolling plan includes making a follow-up on audit findings raised by the external audit. ITEC is also in the process of strengthening capacity, as I explained, of the internal audits. we are hiring people to try and assist our internal audit, because we have been operating, we had only one internal audit, someone who's doing internal audit. So we are trying to beef up that office and so that it can address some of the issues that were picked up by the external auditors. The ITAC Executive Committee also plays a role of monitoring the implementation of the action plan through a report presented that on implementation. We will go to the quarterly report, and you will pick up that some of the information overlap. So we'll just focus on some of the areas where it's mostly numbers, what we have done in the quarter under review. The most of the information will overlap, particularly the information on the introduction and the units and APDP and so forth. So what we will do here is just to focus on the specific information that we have done per quarter, not all members with what we have explained earlier. Just allow us to share the quarterly report, Chair.
Go ahead. Mr. Nkona?
Thanks, Chair. We were just trying to project the quarter one presentation on the screen, just to allow the commissioner to be able to go through the presentation.
Oh, okay.
If you can just have a minute to then project the presentation on the screen, Chair. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, okay. You
should.
Oh, most only, I think I'm struggling because Ugari, they've taken, Shay, I think we're struggling because I don't know if the host has taken the rights to share. Maybe if we can be assisted, because it looks like we don't have the rights to share the documents now.
Yes. Sheldon, can you just give Ms. Nkona the...
Chair?
Yes?
Chair, they do have the hosting rights still, Chair.
With whom is it? I can only see you in
the corner here. I'll see it just below mine, all through the committee.
Okay.
On co-host.
Yeah.
See
okay.
Co-host is still them. It's not taken away. It's not been taken away from them, Chair.
Okay. We just take a minute to allow them to sort themselves out. Are you getting there? There we go.
Thank you, Chair.
Slide mode again from view to full screen mode. Thank you.
As I've explained, we are not going to go through the introduction again, but what we are going to just discuss is the investigations that we have done under the period under review. We have done Bell Equipment application. It was an update. The product was articulated, dump trucks. They were asking for an increase in the customs duties, and this was approved by the commission. We have also done an application for Max Steel Services SA. This was a rebate. It was a rebate on steel sheet pilings. It was granted. We have also done a rebate for a company called Ferro Coating Raisins. The product was toll oil fatty acids, and it was also approved. Just below that, we show the investigations that are in progress. It's a number of them. It's mostly increases and rebates. The review, it's normally an initiative of ITEC, where after the 3 years we review the duties. It's what I was explaining earlier. So when we do the review, what we want to see is to see if you were able to meet your commitments. And at times when in areas where we think you are performing very well, we do increase the duties to the bound rate and ask for more commitments. And the commitments are mostly around jobs. So the ITEC one is what we do as our own reviews. So some of these, especially the new investigations, where we have granted the duties, we are going to go back to them after a period of time and do the reviews to see if they've met their commitments. And it's either we decide to see if the duties, you still deserve the duties, or there is still room for improvement or increasing the duties. The automotive production and development program, I did discuss it in detail. I won't go through it, Chair. Trade remedies, we did discuss it. I will not go through it, but we will look at the investigations that we have done under this quarter. We have done a product called welded chain link from the People's Republic of China, and the applicant is Makinon. It was an anti-dumping duty. And we have also done guarding tools from India and PLC. The applicant was Leisha Tools. It was an anti-dumping duty. The reviews, these are sunset reviews. It's to check if there will be a recurrence of the duties, if the dumping, if the duties are removed. And this was done under this quarter, cement from Pakistan. The applicant was Concrete Institute. And this was a sunset review. It was finalized and the duties were imposed. Lucky Cement was 25% applied on Lucky Cement, and the residual duty was 62.69%. The residual is actually applicable to those exporters that did not participate in the investigation. That are dumping but did not give us any information that can assist us to be able to calculate a specific duty for them. Under imports control, the target is 4,000 per quarter. We have already done 4,475, and majority of these are in marine resources, minerals, fuels and oils, chemicals, rubber and tires, metals, capital goods, mechanical appliance, and the automotive industry. That I said, it's actually crucial that it is controlled, because you do not want second-hand vehicles in the domestic market that will destroy the domestic capacity of our own industry. Export permits, we have issued 3,764 against a target of 3,000. So we issued 3,000 new permits. We have got a target of 3,000 permits per quarter, and we have exceeded the target this quarter. And this this permits below, it shows that for the motor industry, which I said it's a crucial one, we've issued 2,295 permits. For ferrous and non-ferrous waste and scrap, we have issued 761. Organic and organic chemicals, 362. Mineral fuels and products of the air distillation is 194 permits. This slide, we discussed it in the previous presentation, the main presentation, and this one. This is the financial performance of ITEC in quarter one. The financial position, ITEC's total assets increased significantly as a result of an increase in cash and cash equivalents. The annual transfer payment was received in quarter one. This comes from the DTIC. They've already given us the transfer. And the unused portion of the transfer payments for quarter two, which is 2224, is included in current liabilities. Net assets for quarter one amounts to 27.7 million. This we have discussed, the financial performance under quarter one. We have also discussed this one, but let's just do a quick recap. We did talk about the high vacancy rate of over 25% and what we are doing to address this. What is important to note is that if we can have the full complement of employees at ITEC, the transfer payments and the interest that we get cannot be able to cover. We cannot have operational revenue for operational costs. So the saving for us is to have a certain level of vacancy rate, but try to employ strategically in strategic position and not have the full complement. We try to do more with less because of our budget. It is small. If you can look at a current vacancy rate and look at the fact that 90 million is taken by employee costs out of the 114. So if you can have the full complement of staff at ITEC, there is no way that you can have revenue to operate. So this is why at times we do, the vacancy rate might look high, but it's the only way we try to save. I will end the chairperson and take questions from members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. Now's your time to engage with this presentation. I see Honorable Cuthbert. I think you can proceed, Honorable Cuthbert, while we wait for other members.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the opportunity. I see that ITEC has come a bit more prepared than they were last time around, and I'm glad to see that they've taken that particular concern on board from the committee. So I think that in itself is, you know, very positive. However, I'm not very positive, particularly about the comments that were made by the Deputy Commissioner at the outset of his presentation. And that's not because I hold a candle for any other particular, you know, country, but we must also understand the significance of trading relationships and the economic impact that these trading relationships have. And to be quite frank, I'm quite happy that he's not focused on export promotion, because if that was the attitude that we had towards export promotion and economic diplomacy, I think we'd find ourselves in, you know, a little bit of a bind. The second thing being is that I think we must also, whilst there was a concession made on poultry and that was not necessarily in our own economic interest, we must also weigh that up against the benefits that are received as a result of AGOA and our participation in AGOA and the fact that that was used as leverage at the time. And that obviously has benefited other industries such as the automotive industry. And sometimes you win some, sometimes you lose some, and as is the nature of international trade and economics at large, you're always going to have some sort of trade-off. So I think we should just be a little bit more circumspect. The second thing that I want to mention to you, Chair, and I found this particularly interesting, is there was an admission by ITEC that they are actively pushing for the reciprocal agreements from businesses. It's something that Minister Patel, you know, was very lukewarm on in the past, and then only most recently actually, you know, committed to the fact that he had been engaging in this kind of practice, which I personally think amounts to extortion racket. But I suppose, you know, different policy strokes for different folks. However, I just want to understand in relation to these agreements, while they're not published and, you know, made public to firstly members of parliament and members of the public, and if we were to request written copies of all of these submissions of these agreements, can we please get them? Because I think the alternative step would be to PIA for them, and I imagine that on the grounds of PIA we would be able to receive them. Because I think it's important to see what businesses have agreed to, and also, you know, what kind of inducements have been given by government. I do think, you know, this kind of relationship, when one establishes this kind of relationship, it amounts, you know, a very, I would say, alleged collusion. It really doesn't sit well with me, considering, you know, that ISAC is supposed to be an independent body. But nonetheless, if we are speaking about it in the open, I think we should make that information public. I think we should also understand who have been, you know, forwarded these kinds of agreements and declined us, and on what grounds were they in fact declined. And I think that in itself is very important to make public, so that there's more certainty amongst, you know, industries and businesses contained within those industries as to how, you know, ISAC expects them to approach them, as well as, you know, if there's any kind of, you know, legal recourse that they need to take, that they are fully aware of what it is that they are in fact dealing with. There's a couple of things in the presentation as well as the research analysis that Ms. Madalani did, and I'd just like to raise a couple of those issues as well, Chair. The first one is ISAC cites protracted engagement with an applicant regarding a confidential agreement which has caused, you know, significant delays in certain decisions. You know, once again, can there not be some sort of transparency and make these confidential agreements, you know, upfront, allow for people to actually, you know, understand exactly what it is that they are getting themselves involved in? And I think it's very important that this becomes something that is relatively accessible to people, because you would understand that there's been a huge impact on the industry, on industries at large, because there's a number of duties that have been paid because things were not necessarily produced locally and people are still waiting, you know, for the rebates. And I think that that's something that is very concerning as well. The other thing that I'd like to find out is, you know, what is ISAC in conjunction with the DTRC doing to finalize investigations quicker, considering the fact that ISAC aims to finalize investigations within 6 months? And as we would have seen from the presentation that we just received, there's been a number of investigations that have gone beyond this period of time. Can they then also indicate what is the time period that DTRC requires to finalize a matter on their side, and also indicate what it is that they apply their mind to? What kind of work do they need to consider? I mean, in the past, in my understanding, it was something that was purely handled by ISAC and then simply submitted to the minister for his signature. And it doesn't seem to make sense as to, you know, why it necessarily needs to, you know, spend such a long period of time on the minister's desk. So if we can just get a little bit of clarity on that, I would appreciate it, Chair. And I must say, for my disagreements that I do have with the minister has actually come across a lot more pragmatic than what I found ISAC to be this morning. And, you know, if I could make a presumptuous suggestion, I would say that, you know, ISAC should bring themselves in line with the standard that has been set by the minister now, who has, you know, spoken to a more balanced approach than in the past with regards to the implementation of tariffs and other kinds of trade measures as a means, you know, to further industrial policy. And I think that, you know, it would be good for ISAC to maybe follow tack. There's nothing wrong with being a little bit pragmatic rather than, you know, trying to be an ideologue on one side of the spectrum.
Have you concluded, Honourable Cuthbert?
I have indeed. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Honourable Mbiyani.
Thank you very much once more, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Let me also welcome the presentation. It's very much informative. Chair, just a few clarity-seeking questions around the challenges. He made mention of challenges of budgetary issues and also the vacant positions. More especially the Chief Commissioner. Made mentions of import and export controls. My issue here is around the issue of safeguarding and also the protectionist approach. In terms of the safeguard, what are the issues in terms of the increased import? Because he made mention that he was not aware and is not dealing with the countervailing duties as well, but he deals with the trade remedies like anti-dumping argument. So in his view, what is the protectionist approach in terms of the DFIs and also allowing the small business to thrive around the ITEC? And also the last one is the issue of the scrap metal. I just want to check where is the issue now around the scrap metal and what is the view of ITEC around the scrap metal issue, so that as a committee we are able to take an understanding from the ITEC point of view, their views around the scrap metal laws that has been approved by Parliament currently. I will pause there for now, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Malamecha.
Thank you, Chair. Allow me to say the whip have already covered me on welcoming the report. It's just more of comment, especially for the good work done by the team. It's just one will emphasize on the first question that Comrade Mbuyano, how long will it take to fill up that very important position in that organ? Because without it, you will understand the number of decisions will not necessarily be taken correctly. I'm saying this so that we must not rely much on the acting. People who are acting have a tendency of not having full power of doing justice when coming to decision taking. From the Chair, allow me to say, if there's one thing that we must commend this team, is the structure in which they managed to have two, that will be our audit committee and the risk management committee. That alone, Comrade Chair, is the element of convincing me that though they got unqualified audit report, it's not opinion with findings. When I check how they want to remedy the findings through the internal audit committee, one is pretty much covered. Although one will want to know their internal audit committee, who is their regulator to ensure that they meet the standards before it goes to the HE, so that it be more fruitful and helpful to the team. Now, the other aspect that I want them to leave this committee understanding that we welcome their efforts is how they manage to deal with the permits, the issuing of permits. Of the 16,000 targeted that they wanted to do per year, but they managed within 10 days to have 18,749. I think that they must be applauded. The other aspect is the issue of the awareness, in the form of education. One will want to hear how are they planning to deal with the remote rural provinces so that at the end of the day, it be known what they are doing so that we all of us keep illegal doing in the sector. Thank you very much, Kombucha.
Thank you very much, Honorable Malamacha. For me, I just have a question around, it seems like there are areas where there are delays after investigation and recommendation has been made to the minister before it goes to the finance minister who signs off. So does the commission have any recommendations with regards to fast-tracking approvals and implementation after investigations have been finalized? Because I think throughout your the presentation and some of the questions, it has come up as a challenge. So we also see that your performance under the year under review shows that you did experience some challenges, and these include audit findings, as the previous member has indicated, and then also the lack of adequate systems for performance information. So I just want to say that the committee will keep a close eye to see how ITAC resolves these challenges going forward. Over to you for responses. Thank you.
Chair.
Honourable Cuthbert.
If I can take the liberty, Chair, there's one thing that I omitted to ask. May I ask it?
Yes, go ahead.
Sure. It's just regarding the vacancies. So I know particularly during the BRRR process, we've obviously, you know, we've called on the minister to ensure that, you know, the vacancies are addressed at ITAC. But I just want to understand from a practical point of view and a skills set point of view, what kind of skills are missing at the commission itself? I mean, there's some very senior posts that remain unfilled, and this is obviously a highly technical entity. You know, that requires, you know, skills in, you know, not just public policy, economics, econometrics, a variety of different skills. What would the Deputy Commissioner say the skill shortage is at present? You know, and what are they doing in the interim to try and make it work whilst they're waiting for all of these positions to be filled?
Thank you, Honourable Cuthbert. Over to ITAC.
Thank you, Chair. I will also let my colleagues come in some areas.
Sure.
The Honourable Cuthbert is focusing on the commitments from firm and on why they can't be made public. I think it's something to explore, but the challenge that we might face is that the confidentiality is dealt by the ITAC Act, and it's only the ITAC employees who are custodians of the ITAC Act. So if, for instance, you ask a firm to commit, or they say they will commit on investment, employment, and sales, increase in production, those are mostly confidential information of the firm, and they entrust ITAC to treat it that way. This is why they give it to a body like ITAC, because there's an act that governs confidentiality. But it is something to explore. It's just that the challenge will run to these problems with confidentiality. What is important to note is that we are not really forcing firms to do this. It is the application, the form that you fill for customs tariff increases. It's got a section where, on your own volition, you tell us what you are going to do in terms of contributing to government policy. This is, so what normally what they will do is to tell us that if you give me the tariff increases, I'm not only going to increase my profit margins, but there are also government's policy objectives that I'm going to contribute to. This will include employment and investment. So what we do then is to take this and make it an irrevocable undertaking. It becomes legally binding because it's what you have told us. If we are not satisfied, what we do is to send a letter and see if we can discuss this and see if you can improve it. And in some cases, the firms tell us that there is nothing I can do now, but I've given you that seat. I can only employ 5 people, instance. For instance, I cannot employ 10 people. I can't do it. And it's taken to the commission and the recommendation is made to the minister on those bases. So what we are doing is just to take what the firms themselves commit to when they are applying and make it legally binding. It's not that we are saying firms should employ people and be unsustainable in the long run. We are not saying that. We are cognizant of the performance of the firms. We know that they're in business for profits. If you erode all the profits, chances are we will not have applications at ITEC. But we are still having applications at ITEC, which means companies are able to live with this policy and they are working with it. We don't have a dwindling numbers of applications. We are still getting applications, and it's the firms themselves that are committing and making commitments. It's just that we are trying to make them legally binding so that they can be taken serious. So it's the question, it's something that we will explore though to see if we can make this what we call irrevocable undertaking accessible to the public. I mean, just raising concerns about confidentiality matter. With regard to unfinalized investigations at the DTI, what we are doing going forward is to try to involve the sector desk of the DTI at the earlier stage of the investigation. So you don't want to complete the investigation and have the commission make a recommendation to the minister and only the DTI comes at a later stage and tell you that the increase or the rebate is not aligned with the government policy. So as much as we are working within a certain framework, but what we try to do is to ask comments from the DTIC sector desk at the earliest possible stage, preliminary stage, to see what their thinking is. And this, we are hoping we actually reduce the time it takes when they're finally dealing with the recommendation. They will have comments at the earliest stage. And it can speed up the process in that way. And we are having a lot of engagements with the DTI to try to speed up the approval at the ministry level in trying to ask what is really holding the investigation. And maybe if it's referred back to ITEC, we can try and sort out some of the outstanding or disagreements between us and the DTI in some areas. The commission makes a recommendation, but the minister has got a right. According to legislation, he can reject, accept, or refer back the investigations. So when they don't refer it back, they do not reject it, or they don't approve it, chances are there's a problem, bigger problem. So we're trying to sort out some of these problems through engagements with the DTI. The impact of the duties to the economy, you see, what is happening is that you will see with the chicken investigations, for instance, the commission is a technical body. When we do a calculation of a duty, a dumping duty, particularly on the example that has been on the papers a lot, the poultry, what we are looking at there is that is the country dumping? Is the dumping causing injury? That's the mandate of ITEC. We are looking if the products are really dumped, and we look at the dumping margin. If you are exporting the product to South Africa at prices that are lower than your normal value in your own country, that is dumping. And that difference in terms of price, the export price to South Africa and your normal value in your own country. That difference is actually the magic, the percentage that we have to apply as a body. And this is only applied if it's causing injury in South Africa. And the injury can only be, it's mostly on employment, investment, and the sales. Once we see that this dumping causes the injury, we have to, by law, we have to apply the dumping margin. But the consideration on the inflationary impact of that price, of that increase in duties or dumping on the product, is a consideration that has to be made by the DTIC, by minister. His mandate is bigger than what we do. We are a technical body, we do this, but then minister has to consider the social impact of that duty on South Africa. This is why you find in some cases, a recent example is the suspension of the duties, anti-dumping on duties on poultry for 12 months. He, minister, is not saying ITEC made a mistake, but he's looking at chicken being a main protein for South Africa and saying maybe let's delay the implementation given the current conditions. But that's not a consideration of ITEC. ITEC is purely technical in most instances, guided by overall government policy. If there is dumping and it's causing injury, we will impose that dumping duty. And its minister will have to consider the social impact in most cases. Honorable Mbuyane asked about the position of the chief commissioner. The communication that we got from minister is that he is looking, he's still in the process of finding a chief commissioner. It is a DTIC position, it's not the ITEC position. The senior position that ITEC that are vacant is the chief economist, which I explained in the presentation that we've decided to hire someone at a lower level because it will take a huge chunk of our budget if we go for someone with a PhD in economics, for instance. But what is important that I have to emphasize is that ITEC is building an economics unit because as we do our work, once there is a realization that we are not only going to be just imposing duties. We have to also look at the impact of the duties in the bigger economy. And this can only be done by economics and the economists. So it requires a fully fledged economics unit that will just do that. And we have to admit that it's an area that requires a beefing up. You can't just have one person doing this. The impact of a duty is huge on prices of in the domestic market, but ITEC is not really active in that space. We are doing a little bit, but we need more people on that. What I was talking about with the countervailing duties, I was saying it's not that we don't do it; we just do not get applications on countervailing. Countervailing duties deals with subsidized imports from other countries. And what is important is that the subsidies are always offered by government. Now, an applicant will actually allege that China is subsidizing a product, which means it's a measure that is actually against the government. If we try to counter that, you are countering the subsidies of a government. It becomes political. And my assumption is that the reason why most firms don't bring such applications is because they know that it's not firm based. Anti-dumping, we are focusing on a firm, not the Chinese government. So it's not political. But when you look at a subsidy, it's a government that subsidizes. So our action will be against the government. But we are not saying we are discouraging such applications, just that industry don't apply for measures to counter subsidies. We don't see those kind of applications. The safeguards that we are talking about are very, very crucial for ITEC. The safeguards, they counter a surge. If, for instance, the domestic industry has accepted that 40% of the products comes from outside. If you look, for instance, at the automotive industry, if we know that 40% will come from Hande, will come from Peugeot, those who don't have the footprint in the domestic market. But then all of a sudden, the industry works on that 40% and they produce the 60%. They are okay, they have accepted that. But if there's a sale, it means that all of a sudden that 40% becomes 80%. The market share of the industry is now 20%. If that was done in such a sudden manner that it can collapse the domestic industry, what they do is to come to us and say, look, this is what has happened. This product has moved from a market share of 20% to 60% in a short space of time, and we're not expecting this. That's a surge, and it was unexpected. This is when we quickly apply this measure, which we call a safeguard. It's not protectionist, but some industries can die because of oversupply in a short space of time without knowing about it. Honorable Malameja also asks about the DTIC, the position of the Chief Commissioner. It's the same response that I've given. The DTIC, the department is busy recruiting a Chief Commissioner, but it is a DTIC issue. There's a question that I missed from Honorable Nguyen. It's the scrap matter. You see, our view is that we have tried with the PPS on scrap matter. It has worked to a certain extent, but scrap is still leaving South Africa at huge volumes. We have also worked on an export tax, which is 20% for ferrous. But this, the PPS, including the 20% export tax on scrap matter, it hasn't really achieved the desired result. It has worked to a certain extent, but now we are considering, or what the government is considering, is to ban some types of scrap, particularly the ones that are picked up from the streets. The scrap that is going to be allowed is the one that is generated in a manufacturing process. The one that is actually picked up from the streets, or the one that is responsible for destroying our infrastructure, they are cutting rail lines and cutting it into small pieces and exporting it as scrap metal to foreign markets. And this is undermining our infrastructure. The scrap, there will be a temporal ban on it. But the one that is manufactured or the byproducts in a manufacturing firm is still going to be allowed to be exported. And that's our stance on scrap. In terms of who's the regulator of the internal audits, I will give it to my chief financial officer. The comment on ensuring that ITEC is accessed even in rural areas, it's an important one. And I take that comment. ITEC, unlike other organizations, is only based in Pretoria. And therefore, the rural economy to apply, it's quite difficult because they'll have to come to the bigger metros and find consultants there to assist them. Maybe it is something worth looking at to have ITEC also present in some areas that are remote, and also have awareness campaigns and to take ITEC to the people and try to put the organization out there for people to know it and know what it does and how it can assist in their areas, particularly in agricultural products and other products, which is more common in the rural area. So I really take that comment. It's something that we have to seriously look at. I will allow the CFO to attend to the regulator of internal audits before I go on.
Thank you, Commissioner, and good day, honorable members, chair and colleagues. The Internal Audit Committee is a structure that internally reports to the Chief Commissioner. And in the committee, there are various members that come from different professions, like the accountants would be regulated by SAICA, and those that are members of the risk committee will come from the Institute of Risk Management. And if the legal people obviously would be regulated by the professional bodies in the legal space. But the committee itself does report to the chief commissioner or assist the chief commissioner as the accounting authority to discharge his responsibilities. And maybe to also assist, there was an issue around our findings, because most of the findings that we received in the 2021-2022 financial year were mostly around reporting. For example, the actual reports of performance information and certain disclosures that were done in the financials. And the plan that we have drafted was to look at around daily controls and monitoring of information that then filters into the actual reports at the end of a financial year or quarterly reporting. And there were deficiencies that were, or weaknesses that were identified, in the sense that information probably between some of the units that would deal with tariff investigations was not properly coordinated into one central place that can then be consolidated into one report. And hence we're saying that the system of consolidating that information was found to have deficiencies. And one of the things was to say that because the other challenge was around the capacity of the internal audit, because ideally the plan was to have internal audit looking at some on a quarterly basis, looking at the actual reported information and validating that before the information is reported at various governance structures. Hence, one of the plan was to strengthen the capacity of the internal audit function to be able to review and validate the actual reported information before it gets to various governance structures. I'll just hand back to the commissioner. I don't know if this anything colleagues wants to add.
Yeah, there's a last question about the skills shortage from Honorable Cuthbert. It is true. In my view, the internal audit unit has to be beefed up, and the chief economist office. What I said earlier, I do not think ITEC can have one person doing an economic function. We need a fully fledged unit that will do this work. What we want to be as ITEC is not just doing investigation, but also advising the sector desk on trade policy and trade policy measures. Also, what I explained is that as much as we are using tariff policy to assist the domestic industry, but the other element that we are not focusing on is the inflationary impact of the customs duties on the domestic economy. So this has to have very, very skilled people who will try to weigh the benefits of a tariff against this inflationary impact, which can have a huge impact on the poor. So this fine balance can only be achieved by very, very skillful people. We cannot just focus on one side of creating jobs and attracting investment and ignore the impact of a tariff. So it's something that we need to carefully look at, and I agree there is room for improvement in terms of attracting skills, particularly in internal audit and the economics units. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Acting Chief Commissioner. Those are the responses. Can I just hand back to DJC, Ms. Matomela, before we close off?
Thank you, Chairperson. I can just talk through the process of appointing the Chief Commissioner Chair and indicate to the committee that that process, Chair, is at an advanced stage. We are hoping to have that process finalized in the next couple of months, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. That concludes our agenda for today. Thank you very much to CIPC and Team ITAC for your presentations to the committee. And I hope you've noted the areas of concern of the committee members and the areas on which we will come back to you on. Thank you very much. Committee Secretary, can you just brief the committee on our program for next week?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to alert members that we scheduled next week to engage with the Minister on the Black Industrials and Exporters Conference. The Minister will brief the committee thereon, and we'll see a briefing on WTO. Then we scheduled on the 16th to engage with the Free State Department of Economic, Small Business Development and Tourism and Environmental Affairs on the status of implementing the Maluchi Perform SEZ, as well as on industrial parks. We will receive, that engagement will be confirmed this afternoon, Chair. So those are the two sets of meetings for next week, Chair, the 15th and 16th. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And there's no indication yet for when we will be dealing with BRRR.
Oh, my apologies, Chair. We will, on the 15th, before the start of proceedings, we will conclude our, you'll formally consider the report, Chair. We hopefully will, this afternoon, will forward a cleaner report to the committee, which will include the concluding remarks and recommendations proposed by members, in order for members to take it to their respective party caucuses for input. And if there's additional information, concluding remarks or recommendations, we propose that members forward it to the Secretariat for inclusion and for consideration at the next meeting on the 15th. Thanks.
Thank you very much to the Committee Secretary, and thank you to everyone on the platform. A very fruitful morning. Thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chair. Have a good afternoon, everyone.
Long live the chair. Long live the chair.